Well, welcome everyone. Thank you to Honor for opening your home. Reading from Papa, Divine Consciousness of Eternal and Cosmic Reality. Keeping in mind that when we use the word God, what are we talking about? Papa answers, Divine Consciousness is the consciousness of the eternal and cosmic reality. It is attained by transcending the human or individual consciousness. It is born of the soul's complete union and absorption in the all-pervading oversoul. Here, the ego notion which binds the soul to a narrow vision is totally absent, giving place to an extensive and unlimited vision in which all the visible and invisible worlds are included and absorbed. The individual sense has absolutely no place in this exalted state. The person who has reached this spiritual height, though appearing to possess an individual sense, is, in truth, entirely free from it. He lives, moves, and acts from the standpoint of the universal and super-universal reality. He realizes the truth that there is only one existence and one power, both as the unmanifest and manifest reality. He feels at all times that he is one with all beings, creatures, and things in the world, both physically and spiritually. He knows that all movements, changes, and activities going on in him and everywhere about him are one single cosmic power. What is the nature of actions performed by a person who has attained the supreme state? The same power that activates all things in the universe is also responsible for the actions of the persons who have attained divine consciousness. The manifestation that we behold before us is a concrete expression of the divine Shakti, or power. The person of knowledge knows this truth, whereas the ignorant one is unaware of it. The knowledge of it enables the former to become not merely a vehicle of divine power, but also the very embodiment of it. So it is evident that actions are possible in this state. The action performed by one who has realized the truth is a spontaneous outflow from the divine source. Hence, even in a life of great activity, the God-realized soul enjoys the bliss of immortality, for the dynamic nature that reveals itself in action is the manifest aspect of the underlying silent and cosmic spirit. The imagery that God gave to me one time was that if you can imagine a large body of water like a lake, and if you were to see that on a very still day, the mirror-like surface of that lake would be entirely peaceful, but it would also reflect everything that is above it. The mountains, the stars, the sun, the sky, everything. And then imagine at one end of this lake that there is an outpouring of a cascading waterfall. And that the power from that is tremendous. The roar from it, the power of water that's cascading over it, is really terrific. Then return back to the vision of that still lake. Now, all of the potential energy that is pouring through that waterfall is contained in that lake, but you wouldn't know it just from looking at the lake. It appears to be such a temperate, quiet kind of scene. And yet we know that all the power that comes through that waterfall and much, much more is contained within that lake. And so this is the body of God being expressed both as the static, permanent, changeless aspect of God that is the large body of water, and also the expressiveness of all creation that is coming out through that waterfall, down forming into a river. That river gradually makes its way to the sea. And while it's in activity as the river and as the waterfall, it makes noise, it's a constant motion and movement. But when it returns back to that body of water, the lake, then it once again becomes still and static. That is your soul. That is your soul, that lake is. and that the expressiveness of the waterfalls and the river is what we call our life. The ocean is the great embodiment of God. And even though it has so many rivers that are constantly flowing into the ocean is never overfilled by all of those rivers flowing into it. This is a tremendous thing because it explains how it is that we can be both in the stillness and the calmness and also in the activity of God all at the same time. And that is the point that Papa is trying to get across here. Returning back to Papa's words, even after reaching this great height of the all-comprehensive vision of reality, which is all diversity is dissolved, the God-realized soul assumes a position separate from the great truth. He calls himself the son, child, servant, or devotee of God. Here the duality is assumed, knowing that the devotee and the God are truly one. Now, what Mother said was that when she, in her universal sense, chose to manifest as an individuality, she assumed a certain amount of ignorance in order to do that. Because if you're in your full universal sense, there's no consciousness of individuality as a will to speak, to move, to act in this world. So if God is going to assume a form, then even when he comes as his fully realized ones, there's a certain limitation that is taken on in order to become that individual. Sometimes people look at a great spiritual master and they find fault with them. Papa Ramdas would say that people coming to the ashram, they would stay there for a while and then they would start to find fault with the ashram, find fault with Papa, find fault with Mataji and so on. And because they were focused on the personality, the humanness within the God-realized soul. And he says, what do you expect when you come to see me? That I have two horns coming out of my head? That there's something extraordinary in that sense? You have to go beyond the image. You have to go beyond the personality, the individuality. Mataji would say, you all come here to enjoy Papa. And he tells funny stories and he's very relaxed and normal with you. And you come to think of him as just another person. But I tell you, he is the all-pervasive God who has become manifest in this form. And if you don't see that, then you don't see him as he really is. When Krishna manifested to Arjuna, Arjuna saw him as his cousin. He saw him as another king. He saw him as somebody to be deeply respected and loved, that was for sure. And he also sensed in him the tremendous wisdom. That's why he took him on as his spiritual guide. But it was only after Krishna revealed to him the universal vision, in which he saw the individuality of Krishna expand out and was being manifest as the entire universe. And at some point then he asked Krishna to resume his familiar form to him. And he fell down at his feet and he says, I'm so sorry if I was over familiar with you, if I was joking around with you, if I said anything inappropriate. I had no idea who you really were. And so this is the way that we are. We don't have the vision to see until God reveals himself to us. And then we realize that the individuality of the God-realized being is much different reality than what we ever took it for. I've told the story before, but I think it's very instructive of when I saw Mother and she was in the nursing home after she had had the shingles, several strokes and heart attacks. Her body was really going through it. And when I walked into this nursing home, it was as many her nursing homes of the day were. There were people that were in the hallways who were calling out to people who weren't visible to anybody else. There were people who were completely out of it in that sense. And I walked through that and then I came to see Mother. And here, what was before the most powerful individual I'd ever met, the tremendous wisdom that came from her, the tremendous power of God that naturally emanated from her, and here she was sitting in a wheelchair. She had had a stroke. She was one side of her face was completely affected by the shingles, where her side of the face was swollen up. One eye was drooping because they had had to sew a patch over it because they were concerned it was going to explode. And all her left side, that's the right side of her face, and her whole left side was paralyzed. She had no movement in it whatsoever. She couldn't speak. She was just staring rather vacantly at me. She had drool coming down one side of her mouth because she had no control over it. And I was shocked, and I didn't know whether she had any real consciousness of who I was at the time, because she just looked at me rather vacantly. A kind of a funny sidelight to that is her daughter came to see her at this time, and mother had the feeling at the time that she was actually at an ashram in India. So she was very much surprised to see her daughter, thinking that she was at the ashram, and how would her daughter get to the ashram? So she asked her, she said, "Billy, how did you get here?" And she says, "Well, Mom, I drove here." And mother, thinking that she had driven from Seattle to India, said, "Well, that's very interesting." But this was the condition that she was in. And she came back from that so tremendously. I can't tell you where she could walk, she could talk, she had memory, recall. She wasn't as physically strong as she had been in the past. But in so many ways, she recovered her faculties. But I was shocked by this, by her condition. And you see, I was seeing her only for her physical body in that moment. And so I went home. I was disturbed. And sometimes the guru is there to disturb us because we get complacent. We get locked in on a certain stage of consciousness and it's difficult to dislodge us from it. So the guru can take extreme forms in order to get us out of our complacency. Well, this certainly rocked my world. And I went home and I asked God, "What in the world is going on here? I want an answer. How can this be?" And I just continued with that for several hours, and finally I had a vision in my inner eye. And in that vision, I saw Mother, and she was absolutely beautiful. And she was radiant with light, and that radiance, and I can see it now as I close my eyes and I look at my inner vision, and I can see her in that radiance. And that light extended in every direction as far as I could see. And it was powerful. It was expansive. It was even more than what I ever knew her to be in the physical body. And she said to me, not so much in words, but thought transference, "Don't you know I am now in my light body?" And that resolved everything for me. I no longer felt the disturbance. I no longer felt the grief. I no longer felt what I had before, because I knew the reality of what I had experienced. And I saw her for who she truly is in her universal light being. And so this is the point that we must come to if we're to truly understand not only who the guru, who the true teacher is, but also who we are, so that you come to the point where you know yourself to be in that light body, in that being of light, a being of radiance, a being of supernal beauty and splendor. So returning again to Papa's words here. Because in the sphere of activity, the soul, the God realized one prefers to play the part of a lover or servant in order to enjoy the ineffable bliss of love. Love works only on the plane of duality. All his actions, great or small, bear the stamp of love. For love is his being and love is his life, and in love he finds the fulfillment of his existence. Based upon the realization of his oneness and identity with the Supreme Spirit, the devotee still plays the part of the servant or child and acts in all manner of ways as the very incarnation of God. His touch or sight redeems the fallen soul, brings light and happiness where there is darkness and sorrow. He is the real Savior of mankind. And that is a quote from Divine Life, the book The Divine Life. Isn't that marvelous? I wanted to read to you from a diary note that I made from the other day on the 19th. And it's entitled The Light of Lights. I am drawn spontaneously. A spiritual magnet has exerted its pull on me, and I am its willing captive. My attention is focused on the center of my head. Through the inner eye of intuition, I see behind me as if it is the most natural occurrence in the world. As I look behind, the spine is lit up. It is like looking upon a city from a hilltop with its lights blazing on a pitch dark night. An inner voice that is a voice, words, and inner knowledge all combined make me know. You are incarnate to shine this light, to awaken it in others and strengthen it in all. I know that I am to remain focused on the spine and this light, and through my continued attention upon it, the light will direct me in all ways to accomplish its mission. And then I quoted from St. Matthew, chapter 5, 14 through 16. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And from Revelation, second chapter. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and heard behind me a great voice as a trumpet, saying, I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. And what thou seest write in a book, and send it unto the seven churches which are in Asia, unto Ephesus, and unto Smyrna, and unto Pergamos, and unto Thyatira, and unto Sardis, and unto Philadelphia, and unto Laodicea. I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and being turned I saw seven golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed in the garment down to the foot and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet like unto fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. And he had in his right hand seven stars, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was the sun shineth in its strength. And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. And he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not, I am the first and the last. And I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. And have the keys of heaven and of hell and death. Write the things which thou hast seen, and the things which are, and the things which shall be hereafter. The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. Now this saying from Revelations can be a bit of a mind twister until you've had the inner experiences that show you what is being meant. And it starts out with, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day and heard a great voice as of a trumpet saying, I am an Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. Now this trumpet, this great voice, is the sound of Om that comes in from the medulla at the back of the head. And that's why he heard it from behind him. And so when you're in deepened meditation, you'll hear this high-pitched voice. It's the sound of many rushing waters, as it says later on. And that is the cosmic vibratory motor that runs this entire universe. And it runs your body, and it runs everything in you and all around you. It is a tremendous thing when you come into apprehension of this sound, because it is said that the name of God, which is the sound, and God are one. In other words, if you focus upon that sound, you will be naturally lifted and drawn up into divine consciousness, so that the vibration of this Om and the vibration and conscious awareness of God are one and the same thing. He goes on to say, I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and being turned, I saw the seven golden candlesticks. And as I wrote about here in my own experience, that my attention was drawn right to the center of the head. And from the center of the head, it sounds like an odd thing if you've not had this experience, but if you had it, then you know exactly what it's like. And in the center, I turned and I saw what was behind me. And I saw this entire spine lit up like a great city that was lit up in the pitch dark of the night. And it was beautiful, and it was wonderful. Now, it wasn't my experience in this particular time, but other times, I've seen all the different centers individually lit up and down, and there's a count of seven. It starts at the base of the spine, and it gradually works its way up, and each one has its distinctive color. Each one has its distinctive design. It has its own vibrational sound. It has its own taste. It has its own smell. And so that when you go up and you experience each one of these chakras, then you're taken through all these different experiences. Sometimes you'll hear a bell-like sound. It's a ringing sound that would come from a beautiful bell, and it just keeps going with a resonance. And that's your heart center. At another time, you can hear a deep rumbling like a bumblebee. And that's the base of your spine. That's the first chakra, the first center. You may see different signs and sights. I saw the most beautiful sign of this golden circle, and inside of that was a deep blood red. And this is the second chakra that was being revealed to me at the time. Other times there were smells and there were tastes that came to me as each one of these chakras were being experienced as the Christ seed moved up through my spine. This is a tremendous thing that happens. And the fact that it may be rare in this world doesn't take away from that it's absolutely true. And that what we're meant to do is to go through these experiences. Jesus said, follow me. And what he means is literally to follow him, follow in his footsteps, follow in his experiences. Because what he went through was the transformation of the human to the divine. And it's what we're intended to go through, each and every one of us. These scriptures are a roadmap, you see. They are laying out before us exactly what we need to go through in order to get into this highest state of realization. When we understand that, we no longer look at it as a historical document or a document about certain people who lived at a certain time, and as a result of that, it's created a huge religious movement and a church and so on. But it's really speaking to the individual, because it's only through individual experience that the second coming will arrive. Many people oftentimes imagine that the second coming of Christ, he's going to come out of the clouds in the sky. But Jesus himself, when he was talking to Nicodemus, said that man must be born again. And Nicodemus said, what, must we go back into our mother's womb and go through birth once again? And Jesus said, no, you are a doctor of the church, and yet you don't have the most basic understanding. That which is born of flesh is flesh. That which is born of spirit is spirit. I'm talking to you about the things of spirit, and you're relating it to the physical body. Why are you doing this? Lift your mind up. Attune yourself to me. And this is what most of the world does. It looks for physical explanations. It looks for it to fit it into That is an individual who lived 2,000 years ago who's going to come out of the clouds of heaven. The clouds of heaven exist right within you. They're at the ajna, the third eye point, the point between your eyebrows. And it is here that the second coming of the Christ will come. And when it comes, you first see this beautiful white light. It's like when Jesus was baptized and this beautiful white dove came down from heaven. And it is the revelation of this beautiful white light. You see, normally, when you sit down for meditation and you close these two eyes, all you see is darkness. But as these experiences begin to unfold, gradually you begin to awaken to this inner light that is within you. I remember there was a long period of time where I would lay down to go to sleep, and suddenly I would think that I left the light on. And I'd open my eyes, and the light would disappear. And my lamp wasn't on at all. And I would close my eyes, and my whole inner self was illumined. And I would think I left the light on again. And I'd open my eyes, and finally came to know what I was seeing was not the light from a lamp within the room, but rather it was what the interior of my own consciousness was being lit up with this light. So these things come as a reality to you. Swami Muktananda was reading from a certain individual who was doing commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, and I found great exception to what he was saying, because he is talking about that there's a light of the soul that's in your heart center that's about the size of the thumb. And he went on to make great fun of an individual who used to try to visualize this light that was there. Now, the individual had done it for 30 years, and he had varying success with it, and so on. And so he was ridiculing this individual for having that practice. But the truth is, I've seen that light within the heart center. And it is about the size of your thumb. And it contains the consciousness of your soul, of your individuality, and it's right there. And it's something to be had. And so it's not something to be ridiculed. That's an actual experience. It's not just imagination. When it comes to you, you know that it's not imagination. Some things come in the beginning and you're not quite sure. Could this be reality, or is it my own mind making this up? But as you go deeper with these experiences, just try to think, could I make up that experience? Could I try to imagine that experience? And try as you might, you will not get the reality if it is a true experience. It's not just something that you're making up in your mind. Rather, it is something that is being revealed to you. Now, when it comes in its fullness, it's life-changing. It's not just a vision. It's not just something that you have. The first time that I saw the five-pointed star, I was disappointed to some extent. I was inspired because that naturally occurred to me. And it stayed there for about 5 minutes, so I was thrilled with it. But after it had disappeared, I was disappointed to this extent. It didn't have a feeling with it. It was just simply an image that came to me. So as the beginning, it was the dawn of this experience, and I had just recently been initiated into Kriya Yoga by Mother. So I was thrilled about it. But I also knew that it wasn't the life-changing kind of experience that I was looking for. It didn't awaken the bliss in me. It didn't awaken the presence of God within me. So while I felt inspired by it and was glad to have had that experience, I quickly put it aside because it didn't have everything that I was looking for. And this is the thing that we must remain focused on, whether visions come to us, whether we hear the voice of God, whether we see the lights, and so on, is that these are not an end in themselves. We should not be satisfied only with these experiences, but rather they are leading us toward our total and complete realization of God. So this is the key to the whole thing, you see, that we must pursue on until we come into that full state of realization. If we do not, then we will get sidetracked along the way, and we will not get the whole thing as has been promised for us. And when we leave this body, ultimately we will feel disappointed in ourselves. There's nobody who judges you but yourself. But you know, you can be a very harsh critic in your soul. Not that you condemn yourself, but that you feel disappointed in yourself. You had come to go much further, to soar much higher, and you are disappointed that you didn't take advantage of the opportunity. Being here on this earthly plane is a tremendous opportunity, because it is here that when we make the spiritual effort, it pays in such great dividends. Because as the song says about New York, if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And if you can do it here while you have a physical body, while you are contending with the things of this world, then you can do it anywhere. You will so purify your mind by doing it here that there is nothing that can ever interfere with that divine consciousness ever again. It will provide tremendous strength within your own spiritual being. That's one of the great advantages of pursuing this consciousness now and here. It's true that it would be easier to do in the higher realms, in the astral and the causal realms. It's much more easily done. But when you can do it here, you overcome everything. And then there is nothing that can hold you back. So St. John continues here, in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet like unto fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice was the sound of many waters. This is describing the light body of the individual. And when you are turned within yourself and you see yourself as this flaming light, this flaming individuality of God, then you are no longer a human in the sense of a physical body. But you are seeing yourself as you truly are, as a direct expression of divine consciousness. In this form, you have everything that is of spirit. And this is a tremendous vision to have. Your hair is this white wool. In other words, it's radiant with this tremendous white light. Your feet are of brass. Now, brass, or the golden light, is the light of this material world in all of its purity. And that's why it's down at the feet. It's the footstool of God, so to speak, as this earth is. This material creation has this manifestation of this beautiful golden light. And golden light is that pure expression of creation, and is protective as well. If you ever need to protect yourself, see yourself surrounded in white, yellow, golden light. And this golden light is very protective on this material plane. It is also the source of all goodness in the material sense. So that is the first light that you see when you focus here at the asanas. You see that golden light. And that is the light, the radiance of this material creation. And then within that is the beautiful blue light. And within that is that white light that is the five-pointed star within that. And these are the various levels of consciousness that are represented by light. So you see, what you see is this tremendous being of light, and that is you. That is you. And he had in his right hand seven stars. Now, being in your hand means that it's expressive. When it's in your spine, when the stars are in your spine, they're the churches, and they are static in the sense that they don't express themselves in this world. But when they're in your right hand, they become, all these powers, these seven powers from these seven centers, become expressive in this world. And so the churches are within your spine, and they're lit up. And they are the residences of these various stages of consciousness and all of their purity and all of their perfection. And then you have them in your right hand. The right always represents the positive and the good. And sometimes people will interpret that just simply on a physical level. And I knew an individual who went to a Catholic school who was left-handed. And the nuns used to come by and they'd whack him if they saw him writing with his left hand with a ruler, because they considered him to be filled with the devil if he was writing with his left hand. That's ridiculous, of course. And it produced a psychological scar for him. But nevertheless, it doesn't take away in the symbolic kind of language that the right side of you is expressive of the divine principles that, and is also indicated as the sheep. This is the right side of your chakras also, because you have a polarity, a duality within each one of your chakras, a positive and a negative side. And the left side are the goats, or they are the negative attributes of that chakra. And so you have this that is expressed in symbolic, but we shouldn't interpret it on any kind of physical level on that, in that way, because that's missing the point. And so he has these seven stars in his right hand, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword. Now this two-edged sword out of the mouth is what comes through the medulla, and it is two forces that come in there. It divides into two. And it is pure discrimination. It is pure Christ consciousness. You're able with that sword of discrimination to know what is truth and what is not truth. And as a result of that, you have that discrimination. And so that comes out of your mouth, so to speak. You can speak the truth, and that comes from your fifth chakra. In the fifth chakra, you have that discrimination. It comes from the medulla, comes directly down to the fifth chakra from the sixth chakra, and it can express itself through true speech. And in that mode, everything that you speak has to be the truth. And as you attune yourself to that truth and speak to that truth, then you are able to express that truth through words. And you know what Dharma is. You know what is the right thing to do. Not because there's a law to obey, because you have that direct intuition. You know it. And this is a far higher way of knowing than simply abiding by a scriptural law that you've memorized. That's all right in the beginning. It's necessary in the beginning. But gradually, as you learn this inner attunement, then you are able to express that truth through speech. Now, for many years, I had a stone in my throat, and it was terrifically difficult. I could feel it. It was somewhat painful, and it was lodged right in my throat. And I felt that I wanted to get this Christ seed up out of my throat. Now, this is one of the blockages that I had coming into this world, because I had a fear about being seen, about being visible, about speaking the truth. Because of what my people think, persecution that may happen, and so on. Misunderstanding that people would have. And I had to overcome that. I had to get past that if I was to go all the way. And it wasn't an easy thing to do, and there are various levels of it. And I learned as I went along why, in many circumstances, this had happened. Because some terrible things had happened to me down the road as I went through many different incarnations. But you see, that's not an excuse. It's not a reason not to come into balance, not to discover that purity of truth and being able to speak it. Why should you not have a right to your life and to know what you know? When other people seem very free with being able to say what they think, what they want, and yet all the time we feel like that we can't do it for ourselves. That perhaps we're doing something wrong, or perhaps there's some great danger. Well, we may get persecution. We may get misunderstanding. We may get people who ridicule us and don't like us if we speak the truth. But what of it? Are we not here to manifest that light? Are we not here to be a city upon the hill? And to let our light shine. Now, this is absolutely essential in our ascendancy up, that we learn that we have the power of speech, that we can say what is true, and we can say it before God and anybody else. And when you feel the truth of it, when you feel God's stamp of approval upon it, and you feel that spiritual power expressing through you, then you are a force of upliftment in this world. And you can help to change this world. You can help to change others who are seeking to have courage to be themselves in this world. Now, I really struggled with this. And one day I thought to myself, and really it was God thinking through me, that this is my time on the stage. And if I don't do it now, if I don't do it in this lifetime, then when exactly? When do I give myself permission to be myself? And if not now, then when exactly? And I had to take myself in hand. I had to take myself to task and really make a determination that it was all right to be myself and to express myself exactly as I am, to become visible and to let that light shine. And when each and every one of us attunes ourselves to the highest light that we know, and we stand in courage and in the light and knowing what is right, then this world will benefit greatly. And if you make a mistake along the way, you'll know it. When you are sincere, you'll feel it down in your solar plexus. You'll feel that something's off, something's wrong. You may not know exactly what it is right away, but as you investigate it, as you go into it, you'll realize that perhaps along the way you've made a mistake. And then you go back and you do the best you can to rectify that mistake. You learn from it and you move on, because this life is about learning. I came into this life and I felt a lot of shame just being born, just being in this world, a lot of fear and a lot of shame. And I had to change that as well. I had to, again, take myself in hand and remind myself that I was here as a learner. And I wanted to learn my whole life long. Mother said a very interesting thing one time that helped to awaken that in me. She said, you know, it's not when I became fully God realized that I knew every God-blessed thing. God continued to show things to me and to reveal things to me. As long as I have this individuality, I will grow and I will learn. Isn't that an exciting proposition? And in one sense, you are that body of water that is complete and whole within itself. And in another sense, you are that river that's constantly running down to the sea. You are both, you see. And as you merge and enter into the ocean, you become that as well. So you are the pure Atman, the pure soul. You are the expression of that pure soul. And as the expression, you learn, you grow, you take on new interests. God takes great joy in showing you his universe and teaching you new things. And then as you merge into the ocean, then you are one whole complete self. And really, you are all three of these simultaneously. You are the pure Atman soul. You are the expression of that Atman soul as individuality. And you are merged into oneness with God in the ocean. And when you are aware of it, you are all three at the same time, and there's no contradiction. None whatsoever. It is one in three and three in one. It is the trilogy of God right there, the Trinity of God. So going back to St. John, he had these seven stars in his right hand, and out of his mouth went the sharp two-edged sword of discrimination. And his countenance was as the sun shineth in his strength. Just think of that, the tremendous brilliance, the tremendous power, the tremendous light that comes out of the sun. And you have all of that and more within your own soul. You see, all of this is to awaken that knowledge, that revelation within yourself. And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. So you see, when your own human ego has this revelation of this divine self that is within you, then you fall as dead. In other words, your breath, your whole being comes into a state of stillness, of awe, of absolute love, of absolute respect. You come into that state of stillness as if you are dead. And he laid his right hand upon me. Again, it's the right hand, notice that. Saying unto me, fear not, I am the first and the last. So it is the eternal spirit that is within you, the eternal self that is within you, that is revealing itself and blessing you. And it is none other than yourself who is doing this. But it is a higher self. And your individual self is being blessed in this way. And that's one of the qualities of when you touch into the pure spirit of who you are. That is, you know that you are eternal, that you have never been born, and that you never die. You have a body that was born, and you have a body that will one day die. But yourself is eternal, uncreated. And it is the first, the last. It is the Alpha and the Omega. And it is more than that, actually. Because being the first, it was pre-existent to anything that came into creation. Anything that is created is temporary, even though it may last for a very, very long time. And anything that is created will be uncreated one day. But in your purest element, in your purest self, you are that uncreated being. I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Amen. And have the keys of hell and of death. I am he that liveth and was dead, being dead to spirit, being dead to this knowledge and awareness of who and what you truly are. But now you live in that divine consciousness. And behold, I'm alive forevermore in that knowledge of your divine consciousness. You know that you have never been born and you never die. And have the keys of hell and of death. Now you understand. You understand that hell is nothing but a limiting idea and a separation from God. And that when you understand that and you free yourself from it, now you hold the keys to it. You never have to enter back in to that hellish existence of separation from God ever again. And that you hold the keys to death as well, because you realize that death is, in reality, a false notion. It doesn't exist. Only in the mind of the individual did it ever exist. And so now you hold the keys and you are free from that as well. Write these things which thou hast seen, and the things which are, and the things which shall be ever after, the mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden sticks, candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. Now, angels are expressions of divine consciousness. They're revelations that come to you. They're different stages of consciousness. And so they are active. And so they are expression of the seven stars that are held within the hand, or the seven golden candlesticks. That is the expressiveness of God. So God is both static, whole and complete, uncreated, and God is also expressive. And you write within the book of life. You write your own story, or rather, perhaps more accurately, God writes through you. Because in your human sense, you're like a child who's jumped into the driver's seat of the car and is anxious to drive, wants to drive, but has no idea how to drive or where it's going to, really. And it really makes a mess out of things. Mother described that when she was yet a girl, she and a girlfriend decided that they were going to take a little joyride in one of the few cars that they had ever seen before. And so she could barely reach the pedals, and she pushed the clutch down, and it was a hand crank car. They had to get out and crank it over and get it started that way, and they were able to get it started. And she got it into gear and let the clutch out, and down the road they went. But she had no idea what she was doing, and she drove it into a house and hit one of the pillars on the porch, and the porch collapsed, and they were in a bit of trouble. Whenever mother met anybody, any children who were kind of troublemakers and had a sparkle in the eye, and she always, I think, identified with them. She always liked them a lot because they had a lot of life to them. And mother certainly had a lot of life in her. But the ego driving this chariot, this body, this life, is like that child who doesn't really know what they're doing or where they're going to. The ego's true nature is to be a witness, is to be an observer. And it observes what divine consciousness does within you and around you and through you. And as a result of this, that divine consciousness awakens itself within you. And you see that it is this grace that lifts you up and transforms you and takes you on the greatest adventure anyone can ever go upon. And it's the most difficult, it's the most demanding, because it's very, very exacting. As the Vedas say, it is the razor's edge, because you have to learn how to put your mind perfectly on God in all times and all situations. But if you're willing to do that, then God will take you through all of these different things. You see, you don't have to learn these different steps in order to try to make them happen. Somebody was talking to me on the phone and said, well, what about these Kundalini things? How do I make that happen? You don't make it happen. You keep your mind on God, and when God deems that you're ready, He'll awaken those divine energies within you. And you keep your mind on God, and He'll see that everything goes properly. But sometimes there are people who try to get these things started. I'm not in favor of the breath of fire in the yogic practices, because this breath of fire is something that happened to me spontaneously when I was going through these Kundalini experiences, and it was so tremendously powerful. Now, many people can perform the breath of fire and not have anything wrong. In fact, they can have enjoyable experience. But for those who have an experience triggered, they can be in over their head, particularly if they don't have a spiritual teacher, a guru, to get them through them. And so it doesn't do for us to seek out and try to stimulate or get these experiences going. Everything that we're given works with our own natural energies in order to purify the spine and brain, heart, mind, and soul, to prepare us so that when God chooses to take us through these experiences, that we will be strong enough, we will have been purified enough, that it will still be challenging. There is no doubt about that. But that we will be able to keep our mind on exactly where it should be. So you see, this is a tremendous opportunity that we've been handed. And in taking advantage of it, when it is time for us to leave this body, and we rise up above this body, as God has showed me has happened many, many times with this own body, or rather with this own soul, many different bodies. And when you're lifted up, then you will review your life. You'll look back over it, and it'll all happen in an instant. But it's like if you go into a darkened room, and you throw the light switch on, just even for a few seconds, and then flip it back off, you will have seen the entire room. And in a similar way, you see your entire life, all in one glimpse. And you instantly know what you like about it and what you don't like about it. Some intelligence, some consciousness inside of you knows already. If you really contact it, you'll know what you're happy about in this lifetime. You'll know what you're unhappy about. And through that revelation, it will help to guide you into accomplishing what you truly came to do. So let us set aside time each day. Learn to go into the laboratory of your own soul. In a talk that I gave recently, somebody sent me an email and said it felt like you were talking directly to me. I was talking about long-term devotees who get rather complacent. Life is all right. Not too bad. Not that good, but not too bad either. And she said, I'm just glad that you didn't call me out by name. Mother used to say that Master used to call people out by name. He'd tell a story and he'd tell their names and everything, and that she didn't do that, and generally I don't do it either. Once in a while, God has me do it, and there's a purpose behind it. When I was in India at the ashram, I wrote about somebody and something that they had told me. And then it got back to the ashram, and she got into some hot water about it. But it was actually something that needed to be brought to the surface. And it was a tough thing for her to have to go through. And in a human sense, I'm sorry that she had to do that. But it was also a necessary thing to have happen. And it wasn't her fault, she was just telling the truth. And it was a truth that needed to be told. And so sometimes God puts us into experiences, and they're not pleasant, they're not easy. But when we know the truth of it, we know that it was necessary. And that it is there to fulfill a higher good. So let us set aside that time. Let us learn to dive deeper. Soar higher. Go into that divine consciousness. Make an active program out of it. When I was at the ashram, they asked me to give a talk, a couple of different talks. And one of them, I made the point, if chanting Ram Nam has become just something of a habit, just something that you do, you're missing the boat on it. When you chant, listen to the words as you chant them. Feel the vibration of it. Feel the upliftment of it. Feel the positive addiction that goes with it. And then allow that to lift you up. And unless you're experiencing that, then you're not really getting the full benefit from this chant. Not at all. Not at all. Sometimes being at the mandir and you're chanting, and usually my eyes were mostly all closed, but once in a while I'd see something or hear a noise, and everybody's heads would crane and look outside to see who's going by or what car is going by or who's in the auto rickshaw and so forth. And so easily distracted. But if we were to really feel the expansiveness, the power, the transformational power that is within that chant, then these outer distractions would not be so easily pulling us away from the divine consciousness. So let us examine ourselves and make sure that we're experiencing the ever new joy that Sri Yukteswar talks about as proof that we are contacting God. Master used to say that when he meditated, he would never stop meditating. He made a vow. He would not stop meditating until he had contacted God. So there's a criteria for you. And to really dig in, to really go after that experience, not just put in your time, oh, the 30 minutes have passed by, or the 45 minutes, whatever is there. Okay, jump up and keep going. Move on with my day. And day after day goes by. And true enough, you're keeping your appointment with God, but you're not really going further. You've gotten stuck. And so let us use that criteria of accessing that ever new joy. If we're not getting there, something's wrong. We're stuck. And we need to shake up heaven and hell in order to find out what is wrong. Why am I not going deeper? Why am I not soaring higher? Let us be demanding of the highest experience until we get it. So whether we are chanting, doing Hong Sa, divinely loving God, serving God, whatever form our sadhana is taking in that moment, let us feel the great presence of God, the love of God, the joy of God, the bliss of God. Let it fill you up from head to foot. Let it overflow. My cup runneth over, said David. My cup runneth over. Let that bliss flow over you and flow out through your words, through your eyes, through your activities. Be an agent of change in this world to help transform and change this world so that everybody may have that common experience of knowing and loving God. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, dearest Master, beloved Mother, I feel you in my heart.
I feel you as a
transformation
within my own consciousness.
You are the breath behind my own breath.
You are the idea behind my own thought.
You are the life energy
that animates this body.
You are my all,
and all,
in all.
Blessed Spirit,
I am He.
Blessed Spirit,
you are me.
Om.
Om.
Om.